Writing YouTube scripts is a completely different type of writing. And I sort of have to embrace the beginner mentality of like, I'm not very good at this yet. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what good looks like. And there's a giant learning curve.
As we see things accelerate over the next month, don't associate it with any work we did that week. It's going to feel like, oh yeah, we did this and then that happens. Like, no, we need to connect that to the effort we put in January that felt like chewing glass for a lot of it.
Yep.
That's what we need to connect it to.
The worst place to be in any area of life is when you no longer know what needs to be improved. And so reframing being bad at something as you are overwhelmed with all of the things that can be improved, which means you have tremendous upside ahead of you. You have to realize that being bad and knowing that you're bad at something is the path to getting good at it.
Boom. Welcome back to another episode of the Espresso Hour 2024 week 12. And wow, I just had a very strange deja vu saying that where I feel like I just teleported here from this exact moment a week ago where I said week 11, because that's how this week seemed to go.
It's
just like, poof, we're right back here recording once again.
I feel like whenever we talk on Fridays too, we're like, how was the week? I have to actively remember what even happened on Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Just so much happens.
I've been trying to do a better job with that by finishing out my day with just a bullet point list every single day this year. Like what happened, what I work on. And then that's how I usually write up this recap of what happened during the week. But most of the time, and just like you said, I look at Monday, I'm like, Monday could have been a month ago.
Yeah, it feels so long
ago. I feel like we say that every single episode, but that's how it goes.
I think there's a bunch of good lessons and realizations this past week. It's funny though, because I feel that every week. And then half the time I feel like it's just the same lesson or realization over and over and over again.
One of my lessons and realizations for the week was very meta. It's that I'm writing these every single week, but not looking back at them enough. And now that we've been doing this all year, I want to enter them all. My idea is put them in like a spaced repetition. You heard of Anki? Anki, it's like a note card app that lets you put a bunch of things, like things you want to remember and remind yourself with, and it will randomly show you one of them.
Hmm.
Like imagine just waking up and you have a lesson that you've learned in the past showed to you again.
That's a cool idea.
That's what I want to do by the end of the year. So we thought it'd be fun. We pulled up a random Espresso Hour clip that we have not watched from the first week of the year. This was Feb 15th, so 6 weeks ago. We're just going to play one of the lessons and react to what we learned in the past and see what happens.
It's going to be the same stuff we're learning again.
All right, here we go. That'll be really cool. Why don't we just keep going down this list? So for context, I've been sitting down on Friday mornings every week so far this year for an hour and recapping everything that happened in the business. So I go through our Slack, I go through all of my messages, I go through my daily recaps, and I say, what is it that we built this week? I write it up, usually five or six things, and then I try to distill the lessons and realizations. We also open source this to the team to share any wins that they had or things that they learned and things they worked on. And then I send it to them in the morning. This is just going to be the video version. And so the second thing
just
we did
we've done.
Is
here we are.
Was boring infrastructure.
A lot of boring infrastructure.
And here we are 7 weeks later, and we have reached the end of what feels like boring infrastructure. And I think we're about to say that it was only going to be a week.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's been the theme of the year. So one of the lessons from earlier, so the first or second week is theming weeks at the beginning of this is blank week. So we did it with success week 2 weeks ago, and this week was infrastructure week, where it...
Infrastructure week turned into infrastructure quarter is what we have learned. That's awesome.
We thought
it'd be a week.
Just primes everyone to think, I'm putting my effort towards something like infrastructure. If it was a new product, it would be new product week or new feature week or something like that. Just the high level focus of the team on one specific thing has gone a long way already.
Yeah, I think that's super important too, because the default is always, yeah, I got my priority, I'll remember, and then Tuesday afternoon rolls around and there's all these things fighting for your attention.
Literally.
And it becomes so easy.
And that happened again this week.
You know, that happened this week. You know, actually listening to this gives me an interesting insight, which is I think all human beings, we do a horrible job of estimating how long or how much effort something's going to take. But I think most people look at it and go, that's going to take me so long. And then they choose not to do it.
Mm.
And people who are entrepreneurial intentionally or unintentionally lie to themselves and go, that's not going to take me very long at all. And then it takes them 2 months. And it's almost like, you know, which both sides of the barbell are bad in their own ways, mm-hmm. but you sort of just have to embrace the fact that like you, we never know. We never know how long something's going to take or how much effort it's going to take. And you just have to embrace that.
I think we've learned that lesson. We say it every single episode. And I'm worried some of these episodes are just going to be, here's us learning the same lesson. It's going to take 25 iterations of it.
Yep.
But that's funny. And we should do that every week. Pick a random lesson from earlier in the year and see, are we still learning it? Or we need to be reminded of it? Or mm-hmm. have we learned it again?
It's helpful for us too.
For sure.
You know, because it just reinforces the fact that a lot of this stuff is so simple, mm-hmm. but you just can't remember it.
Okay, let's actually dive into some of these. And you want to start with your YouTube realization?
Yeah, so I've been spending a lot of time, you know, we hired this great editor. We've been investing more and more into YouTube. We see this as like our next big organic acquisition channel. And so I've spent the past 2 months focusing the majority of my attention, if not on overhauling the curriculum, focusing on YouTube. And a couple really interesting insights that I've had. One is I think we had a really flawed belief like a year ago. Remember when we first dipped our toe in the water?
Yeah, my YouTube channel still is the same 5 videos where I was like, yeah, we'll just start YouTube.
Yeah.
It'll just like all edit and film them all.
Yeah. Nope. So that was a giant flawed belief. Second flawed belief was thinking we have all this text-based content. We can just basically read it on video. And I think on some level that would have been good enough to start. Hmm. But as I've really dug into YouTube, it's become apparent to me that it is such a different platform with different rules, and writing YouTube scripts is a completely different type of writing. And so even though we have all this data around what hooks work well, which topics work well, we've obviously learned a lot through the text side. To really get good at a platform like YouTube is something completely different. And I sort of have to embrace the beginner mentality of like, I'm not very good at this yet. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what good looks like. And there's a giant learning curve that's going to need to take
place. I'm reminded of this curve. You familiar with this Dunning-Kruger curve? Peak of Mount Stupid right at the beginning.
That was us 6 months ago or a year ago.
I feel like this with I told you this morning with my Muay Thai. Uh-huh. Where I was like, oh yeah, I'm just throwing punches. And now I'm like, every single punch I throw is pathetic. I should just never do this again. And I'm hoping I can sustain to this. But there's something about that feeling that I'm trying to reinforce to myself that means I'm on the right track mm-hmm. with whatever it is I'm doing. That frustrating feeling of being a beginner that feels like nothing's working is, I have so much evidence in the past that 3 to 6 months after that feeling, if I can push through that initial stage, I'm in the right spot, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, my reframe here is the worst place to be in any area of life is when you no longer know what needs to be improved. And so reframing being bad at something as you are overwhelmed with all of the things that can be improved, which means you have tremendous upside ahead of you, you know? And so when you think about it like that, you have to realize that being bad and knowing that you're bad at something is the path to getting good at it. Whereas if you're good and then you go, I literally don't know how to get better. Well, now you're in a worse position.
And it's the prerequisite. And the only reason people fail to break through that is they're worried about other people seeing them look bad. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I think that's why I stopped YouTube in the beginning. I was like, oh, I'm not very good at this. And it's going to take me such a long time relative to all the other things I could go and do that it's probably not worth it. But
I will say, you know, YouTube is a really fascinating vehicle because not only does it make you think about writing in such a dramatically different way, but it's also one of the only vehicles where you have feedback on where people fall off in your writing, which I find to be really interesting. You know, like you sort of can intuit that with a Twitter thread where you can see like the likes sort of descend the further, you know, like you can almost anticipate the drop off, but YouTube, it's very clear. It's like at 2 minutes and 48 seconds, this is where you lost everybody.
Wow.
And that, if you add that into your toolkit of how do I become a better writer, the feedback loop on that is bananas.
Imagine if Substack or Beehive or all these other platforms had like a, you know what Hotjar is?
Uh-huh.
Where it shows you, if anyone who doesn't know what Hotjar is, it's like a landing page software that shows you where like people fall off or where they're spending more time. Imagine if every email newsletter had that.
And it's like, this is where the weakest part of your writing is. That would be fascinating. Because then you're optimizing for retention. It's, wow, should we build that?
It's a pretty cool.
Yeah, that's
people,
really cool.
I know people have wanted stuff like that. I've wanted stuff like that forever.
Imagine, yeah, because it worked with Twitter threads. And I remember as I was learning to write threads, what part of the reason I got good at it was like, okay, I'm going to make it where every tweet has a hook that leads into the next tweet.
Mm-hmm.
My most successful threads, you look, they always end with a colon. It says like, and here's what I mean by that colon. And it just glues people or helps them slip all the way down the page. That's super interesting.
Yeah. Another thing on the YouTube front is I think we're getting better and better at this, but just learning the value of paying down your ignorance tax and paying for the ideal scene. And so a couple of weeks ago, we hired a YouTube coach, which talk about an amazing niche.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting doing our first feedback call together where we watched the most recent long form video that I made and I had him watch it. And then he would pause all throughout the video and point things out to me. And I think I learned more in that call than I would have learned churning out videos for 6 months.
Hmm.
And I've always been such a big believer in like, there's no better way to learn than pure volume. But now that we've gotten to the point that we're at, that's like a strong belief weekly held, you know, is I now no longer believe that. I think when you're starting something, as quickly as possible, you want to get the person who has the ideal scene in your ear. Because the amount that I'm going to be able to improve with that feedback loop in a month is going to probably be more than what I would have figured out on my own in a year.
So I actually don't think they're different. I think you pair them. Because it's still volume with its intentional volume.
Yes.
Which leads into my first lesson from the week on how you can create a learning plan or a iteration / improvement when you're doing something that's rep based. So I'll use my example for the sales guys, but we can workshop it for your YouTube videos. So Alex Hormozi has a great definition of learning is same condition, different behavior. So you're presented with the same thing. For your example, it would be I'm writing a YouTube script. I know that in the past, there's been drop off here. I've learned that I need to write a better hook to hook people's attention. Same condition, different behavior.
Yep.
What I had our new sales guy, Josh, do is put a numbered list 1 to 50 for his first 50 calls. And after each one, his only job is to make one tactical improvement. Because this, and it bleeds into what you were just talking about, you're overwhelmed with the number of things you could improve, which means you improve none of them. And so if you make it where you can only learn one thing from each call, what is that one thing that you learned?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with your YouTube videos. It's you might be learning multiple things, but really focus on learning one new thing for each video. Like, what am I going to do differently on the next one?
Yep.
And then the follow on to that is intelligence is the speed of learning. So use the sales example. If you get on a sales call and you say the wrong thing, and then the next call you say the wrong thing again, and you say the wrong thing again, and you say it again, and then finally on the fifth one, you learned.
Mm-hmm.
That means it took you 5 reps. The fastest you can really learn is the very next rep, you put that new behavior into practice.
And you never revert.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for him, he put his lesson on number one of what he learned from that call. And then when we watched the second call, he did it. It's like, that is by definition, the smartest you could be in this game. You saw something, you implemented it on the very next one. And so I think you could do a similar thing for YouTube of what were my takeaways, but then what is the actual change I'm going to make for the next one?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can still win with volume, but the depth of learning with each rep will be higher.
Yep.
We've talked about this in the how to get better at anything. It's do more reps or improve more with each rep. You improve more with each rep by having a coach, and you do more reps by just doing more.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's sort of been the flaw in that mentality I've had for so long, because 50% of that is true. You know, like volume wins. So more volume, more, you're just going to get better. But if you can increase the depth of each rep, then you're moving twice as fast, you know? And I think you can see how people make mistakes on both sides. It's like they hire the YouTube coach, but they don't do volume. So it's like you're paying for the ideal scene, but you're not actually putting in the effort, you know? Or in my case, I would put forth all this effort, but I like, whether it was pride or ignorance or whatever, I like wouldn't pay for the ideal scene, or I wouldn't ask for help, right? So you can see it's the same problem. It just presents itself in different ways.
Yeah, I was catching up with a buddy who has been blocking 2 hours or 1 hour per week to go on intros. You know what intros is, where you can buy other people's time for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's put money aside that he must spend every single week on intros, talking to someone in his industry that might have the ideal scene.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I want to start doing that.
Because you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. So you just get on and say, here's what I'm doing. Can you give me a third person perspective? And I think that goes another way of like, how can you iterate? And especially in this game, when you get to a higher level, you don't, there's no book.
Yeah.
Like, you need contextual, I've been there advice.
Yep.
You know, which I thought was super interesting.
Yeah. A similar thing I found myself thinking about, I think I was having this conversation with someone in PGA this week too, is just at a certain point, if your strategy to make more progress or make more money is you need to work harder, that usually means you're doing something wrong. Because past certain thresholds, it's not an effort problem. It's a, you know, depth per rep problem, you know, or are you working on the right thing? Yeah, I just think that that's something I keep thinking about.
Yeah. And again, this will be a lesson we continue to learn, and hopefully it helps someone who's in that same scenario.
Yeah.
Do more reps, make it, hire a coach, hire somewhere where you're at least getting a one takeaway, but try and cram as many takeaways as you can into each rep.
Yep.
This leads nicely into this culture is built through example. So I've noticed, I started with this immediate action, culture of like next rep iteration. How are you going to improve on the very next time you do it? So I had Josh do it, and then Tristan, Connor, and Artia all created documents similarly. And so it was like, we have it, and then people follow on. And if you've noticed, we have had a couple new things pop into Slack recently, which are everyone on the team is saying closing the loop, right? And that has just come from like one or two, like Daniel started saying it. And now anyone, when there's an open loop and it's completed, starts the phrase with like closing the loop, and then it gets it out of the mental bandwidth. And that's not something you can just say, hey, everyone, start saying closing the loop.
Yeah, no, you have to see it.
You have to see it multiple times. Same thing with, we've been doing these success meetings two or three times a week. And just right after every meeting now, everyone who's on the meeting puts their immediate action items into Slack in that channel. And that's, again, built through example and then just reinforced. You see someone else do it, you do it, you get rewarded for it.
Yep.
It's interesting to see that come to life.
I really feel like one of the best things that we've done from a culture perspective is, and it starts with us, but embodying it and facilitating this idea of, you don't take any task and go, I'll do it this week. Like I'll get it to you this week, or I'll get it to you next week, doesn't exist in our business. It's all, I'll get it to you in an hour, you know, or I'll get it to you right now. And the speed at which we're able to move, like, I just, it trips me out sometimes because I'm, you know, we live inside our business and our Slack, and then I go and I'll see inside someone else's business, or I'll just sort of like be aware of other, the ways that other people work. And it's just wild how much the default is, I'll get it to you by end of week.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
End of week is like it's like 3 months from now.
We can barely remember what happened this day a week ago. How are you going to continue to? But my favorite part of this is when something might have to get pushed to tomorrow. It's like, I think I might have to do that tomorrow. Like, that's the way they approach it.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm going to have to push that one. Now it's fine.
Yep.
You know, I thought that was funny, but I've been noticing these because I want to write a long form piece on how we use Slack to move fast. Like, how do you Slack to move fast? I think is a cool hook.
Yep.
Just all the different things that we do with all the channels, the emojis.
Using Loom for almost everything. We don't default to calls at all.
Right. So all those little nuggets I'm like letting marinate in the background.
Yeah.
How about this one?
Yeah. Next. Doing the easy, obvious thing.
So this goes back to pick the low hanging fruit, but we certainly have more low hanging fruit than we thought. And it's going to be a continued.
So the easy, obvious thing here was, if we open more call slots for PGA, all of a sudden we have more enrollments. The question I would ask is, do you think we could have done it sooner, or did we open that loop at the right time?
I don't know. I think we could have, and more than likely that would have been fine. But the risk was when you bring someone on that it wouldn't have gotten filled, then they're in this like weird limbo stage. Mm-hmm. We have now over the last week had record traffic. So mm-hmm. record traffic across different platforms, and we're only able to see that because of the infrastructure we set up to start the month. But that leads nicely into it feels slow, 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 and then happens all at once.
Yep.
Where this was our biggest week of traffic. Most email core subscribers, most applications, most book calls, and likely most enrollments, which yep. is pretty cool to say out loud because of what we've been leading up to all year with the boring work we've been putting into this. Now we can look back and say, let's reinforce all that boring work we did because it is working now.
Mm-hmm.
And back to your question on, could we have done it then? I don't know, but I think we did it at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's always interesting to look back and go, could we have, you know, was that the right call?
More than likely. Yeah. Because if you think about what happens with our calendar, the most popular slots by definition get picked first. So they're Eastern time zone in the middle of the day.
Yep.
So now three people can book at 1 p.m. on Monday.
Yep.
Whereas before it was two. And so to that extent, more than likely we could have done it earlier, but either way, we had to learn that lesson. We could not have done that and built all the infrastructure at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like build the infrastructure that allows us to make that clear decision from data. And the only way that we saw that was we saw applications go up, but the conversion of application to booked call started going down.
Mm.
And that was like, okay, clearly if we had more, that number would go back up. And that's exactly what happened, which is fun to, you know, like I've been saying, sitting at that orchestra level of like, okay, bottleneck, why is that number going down this week when the other one went up? Okay, cool. That's actually the bottleneck now.
Uh-huh.
Let's do it. But I don't have that data for the last, you know, 16 weeks. So I can't tell you that full answer, but
yeah,
that's exactly why we did it. It was like, oh, surge, no way to release that new, traffic, release it. It worked.
Yep. Yeah. The other thing about the slowly, slowly then all at once is I think the more mature I'm learning, this is just the more mature the business gets, every decision you make by definition has a longer and longer time horizon. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like as the business matures, you have to get more and more comfortable with postponing the dopamine,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the once you're at certain, like as you cross a certain milestone, the only thing that's going to move the needle is something that's further down the line because mm-hmm. it takes longer to build something that actually is going to have an impact. And so to build something that actually has an impact is going to take longer, which means you go through longer, longer stretches of no dopamine, which is very different than when you're first starting something. 0 to 1 is dopamine like that day.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I got a sale that day, you know?
Mm.
So it's just, I think as we keep growing, getting more and more, we might go through an entire year.
Right. And it's retraining where you're getting that dopamine from. Yep. It is the boring work, because that's why I kind of put this in there, is as we see things accelerate over the next month, we need to connect that to the effort we put in January.
Yeah.
And that's what's difficult.
Yep.
And as I've studied more and learned more about behavioral psychology, like reinforcement, the further that you put a reward from the action, like the less it just makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the natural association will be weaker. So I think it's going to be on us when that starts to go. Don't associate it with any work we did that week.
Uh-huh.
It's going to feel like, oh yeah, we did this and then that happens. Like, no, it's the foundation we set for the previous 8 that felt like, you know, chewing glass for a lot of it.
Yep.
That's what we need to connect it to.
Which means going back and watching old espresso hours.
Right, exactly. It's like the one where that intro where it's like, yeah, you know, we're going to be looking back at the next 6 months and like all these are going to come together. Uh-huh. And I'm like, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully.
That was so funny.
That's the bet. And what about the every metric needs an anti metric?
Okay, so we talked about this one a handful of weeks ago, but the Cobra effect where they started breed cobras in India or England or something. And the goal was to reduce cobras. So they said, if you brought a dead cobra in, you get $100. And what did that do? They started to breed cobras and kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent some time this week thinking about each different business, breaking it down into marketing, sales, and success. And thinking, what would the metrics be if I only could have one metric for each business within each area?
Mm.
And then I want to tie that to an individual person and say every person should know what their one metric is that they're optimizing for. Hmm. So in the marketing of PGA, that's EEC subs. Now, the reason you need an anti-metric is, or some kind of constraint, like we talked about last week, when you set out to build a business, start with the constraints. Mm-hmm. If I said our goal, which is to get 1,000 email course subscribers per week, you could get that running a ton of Facebook ads.
Mm.
So what is the anti-metric? It's open rate for those emails. Right? So you have to get engaged subscribers. And so for sales calls, it's, I want to have this many booked, but show up rate has to stay above this.
Mm.
And you really should only have one. If you take the time to think about it, it's like YouTube views, but the like ratio is higher than mm-hmm. X, right? Because you could put a super clickbait title, and if you don't deliver on the video, it's going to get a bunch of clicks. Retention has to be like, that's yep. the type of thing. And so as I was coming up with these metrics to share with the team, I spent time thinking, what do I want the anti-metric to be?
Mm.
And so we could honestly run through those, because I think it's an interesting example. Let me see if I can find.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And what I'm trying to do now is, when I come up with little frameworks like this, write up a long form post about it, where basically I'm trying to say the entire company should have one clear number. And then everyone else, each department should have one clear number that contributes to that one. Mm. And you should have a pairing metric for each one. So I was writing this out. Like, the reason this works is it becomes super clear. Have you ever heard I think it's The Boys in the Boat. You ever heard of that book?
Mm-mm.
It's about like Harvard's rowing team or something like that. But basically they had one goal, and it was to make the boat go faster. That was their only thing.
Mm.
And so everything they did, they would run through the lens of, will it make the boat go faster?
Mm.
It's like, oh, am I going to do this? Well, will it make the boat go faster? And it's this focusing question. So when you have one number, it's, will this lead to more EEC subs or less?
Yeah.
Will this lead to more enrollments or less? So I had, for like high level metric, it's the number of new students enrolled. And then the anti-metric is accounts receivable collected. So the reason that is the anti-metric is you can enroll a bunch of people for $100 down
mm-hmm.
and then spread the payment out as much, but you'd be enrolling yep. unqualified people who couldn't pay it off. Email course subscribers for marketing, the anti-metric is the open rate. Sales, it's number of calls on the calendar. Anti-metric is show rate. And then success, it's number of students who have landed a paid client, with the anti-metric being NPS score above a certain number.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's the pairing metric is it prevents us from only giving the like most promising students attention because that would lead to more if you gave them more attention, but then you're neglecting the other ones.
I see.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I went through that whole thought exercise for like Write with AI, for Async Ship 30. And that was when I was trying to treat this more like a portfolio. And
it's the right way to think about right. it.
We need to sit down and think about this a little bit more, but it was one of my fun thought experiments this week.
Yeah.
It's every business should have one top line number. Every department goes into all those numbers. Each number has an anti-metric, and every person should know, what is my, will this make the boat go faster number?
Hmm.
And it takes time to build that, but I think that's our next internal clarity
mm-hmm. thing. It also just creates or nurtures that culture of unreasonable accountability mm-hmm. internally,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's one thing for someone on your team to know, this is what I need to do, but it's another for them to know and understand, this is what I need to do in order to oversee or increase this specific data point, which directly contributes to the larger whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember like years ago, I used to write a lot about like problems inside big companies and things when I was writing for Inc. magazine. And one, like so many of the studies that people would talk about is, in big companies, the reason employees get so unhappy is because they don't actually understand how their efforts contribute to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's just myopic, like, oh, I make social media graphics, but you, no one has connected for you. You know, graphic leads to lead quality, leads to booked calls, leads to mm-hmm. increasing company revenue. Like, you just, no one's drawn that line. So I like this a lot because it just keeps everyone on the same page as well.
Right. And they're not, incentivized on that number.
Uh-huh.
Right. So if you're not, if you don't, you can't incentivize someone that doesn't have the connection to the high level number.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so we should sit down and kind of go, okay, what is actually marketing? It's both social media and video. And say, what are our video metrics that are contributing to email core subscribers, mm-hmm. right? Because you go a layer deeper, it's each person, right? This is where it gets fun. Each person within each department has their number that contributes to the department number.
Yep.
The department number goes to the high level number.
Yep. Yeah, in order for us to, you know, I think build what we ultimately want to build, mm-hmm. this is the sort of thinking that is required.
Mm-hmm. And admittedly, this is the type of thinking that when I have meetings at 8, 9 a.m., I don't get to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about this last week, like 2 to 3 full days where I get to wake up and just think about this for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know? And we'll get there.
Yeah.
We're in a intense scaling period. So
when haven't we been? I'm excited for what we got. We have a couple, you know, big projects that we want to tackle the rest of this year, but I'm really excited for everything that is to come. And all of the work that we've done the past quarter mm-hmm. was absolutely necessary.
For sure.
It might've been boring, but you know, boring work is the moat. Ever since we said that, I can't stop thinking about mm-hmm. it. Cause you look around and you realize
wider and wider and wider.
And you know, it's really interesting because I think creative people in general tend to be the ones, you know, if you're creative, you don't have a problem coming up with good ideas. The problem is you don't spend enough time digging into the boring work in order to build that creative idea. Mm-hmm. So that actually brings me a lot of solace sort of looking at what other people build or do. And I'm like, that's a great idea. And also like you're going to have shiny object syndrome. Mm-hmm. You're going to give up on that idea before
you're
it becomes
hit that
a thing.
Trough of disillusionment.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And like recognizing that also reinforces the moat that we're going to continue to build, because I think one of our unfair advantages and one of our innate skill sets is being able to fall in love with boring work, mm-hmm. you know, and
we
not,
slayed enough boars growing up.
Yeah. We built that skill.
Good week. Personal updates. Great week. Headed to Arizona,
yeah,
check out some houses.
Yeah, going to Arizona.
Do you think you're
going to
put a bid in?
I don't know. I keep talking about it with Alyssa, and she's like, you know, we're not in a rush. We don't need to do anything. And like, we're not, but I also feel the urgency of just, yeah. you know, I don't know. I've journaled about it a ton, and I've sort of reached a plateau point where I know I can't make any more progress reflecting on this until after this week, because mm-hmm. I need all this new information to reflect on.
Well, I want to hear about it too.
Yeah.
I think talking about pros and cons of each of those as a,
yeah. What about you?
Reluctance, the wrong word, but someone who's found out all the negatives of home ownership recently or over the last couple of years with flooding, with the fact that you only pay interest, you don't even get any equity for like the first 7 years. Mortgages are kind of a scam. It's like, it's a real thing. So we'll talk
is
more
it
about
really,
that.
Is it years that you don't end
oh,
up?
Oh, like years. Yeah. Because it's a
they
curve.
They front load all the interest.
All the interest is like you're 85% of my mortgage payment for the first year was interest, and then like 82% and then 78% and then 75%.
Oh, no.
So like if you move within 7 years, you would get like 10%, 15% house equity. And the rest is of interest of those first 7 years of payments. You are basically renting your house for 7 years. It's not cool. So yeah.
No.
And then you hear that and you see the chart and you're like, what? Cause you get to write off mortgage interest. So you say it's 33% cheaper,
uh-huh.
but yeah, one of the many things that sucks.
Wow. Do you know, until you said that, I never actually understood why people said you have to stay in a house for at least 5 to 7 years.
Cause you don't have any equity.
I didn't know that it was the interest paying down. I thought it was just, if you try and sell it again, the market isn't going to be in your favor.
Well, that too, because what happens is because you get such little equity in the first 7 years, you're going to net out a loss because of the 3% sales.
Mm.
So like any equity that you do build, you just pay back out to the realtor.
It just slashes your margin on it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at like, this is the graph.
This doesn't make me very happy.
This is what we're doing. We're doing it live. So you see this green?
Yeah.
That is.
Oh, interest. I see.
See how it like, in year 30, it's like 92% equity. in year one.
Because the banks made all their money.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a scam. Giant rigged scam. So there you go. Hope that doesn't deter you
from I accepted a long time ago that buying a house is not a financial decision. It's an emotional decision. Mm. The only reason you buy a house is because you want the emotional groundedness of starting a family. You know, because if you actually wanted to make a return on buying a house, you wouldn't buy a house to live in. You would buy a house to rent out to someone else. So I've sort of accepted it's an emotional decision. But looking at that chart, okay, so question, with that in mind, would you then, instead of just paying the monthly mortgage, would you try and dump prepay, a lot?
More in? Yeah, because then you're paying your principal is way less.
Can you do that like a year in and be like, I want to put another? No,
that wouldn't be smart because you would get a worse interest rate to start. You should just pick an amount to put in up front. Yeah. I could be completely wrong on that also.
Okay.
So I would ask someone else. Yeah. I put very little down on mine. But mortgages were free back then.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
Mortgages
were free. So that's buying a house 101.
Yeah. Okay.
From friggin' professor idiot here.
Yeah. I don't know anything. Literally the worst person to be talking to about these decisions. But here we go.
So personal for me.
Yeah. What about you?
I talked to you about Muay Thai this morning.
Uh-huh.
I was about to throw hands with my instructor who absolutely demolished me. He's like a 5'4" French dude. I just wasn't in a good state this morning. And he's just as I'm throwing these 6-7 punch combos, he's just shaking his head, real subtly, all his shit on, taking it. He's just no. I'm you motherfucker. That every time he'd do it, and then I'd get angry and I'd want to hit the back harder. And he's softer, control. And then I do one. He just, no. I throw a kick. He's like, no. But that was it. Just really subtle, softly to himself. And I'm like, okay.
But you know what? Again, it's that will make you get so much better, so much faster. I think so.
Maybe on a per, I was not getting better intra workout today because of that. I was the reinforcement was not there. It was only negative reinforcement. And I'm I don't know really what I'm doing wrong. And now I'm just angry. So that was fun. And girlfriend lands today. Do some nice.
Got some good dinners and good plans. Dinners.
I'm going to go to the Heat game.
Did you get 6 seats?
No.
Moderately 6 seats?
I'm not going to go courtside. I'm not sitting courtside for this one. If I actually, I thought hard, long and hard about it. They're available. I wish we would have got the contact of the guy that we actually went
with. I thought we did.
He didn't ever text me.
Oh, sad. No.
Yeah, I should have made sure, but. No, I got good ones, not sick ones.
Yeah, it's okay, right. That's fine.
I don't like Steph Curry enough.
Yeah.
We saw LeBron.
That was LeBron.
That was cool.
The wind-up dunks.
Yeah, that was sick. That's what we got going on. You'll be in Arizona next week. You still want to do one?
I don't know. We'll feel it out.
Okay.
We'll see.
Cool.
We might do one on the road tomorrow or next week. Otherwise, we'll catch you a week after.
All right. That's it for this week. If you're on YouTube, don't click off the video. Hit subscribe. Hit all that good stuff. Don't click away just because I'm doing the wind down. This is the lesson from your YouTube coach.
Yeah,
don't do this big wind down. Also don't want to just be all right, we're out of here.
Yeah.
So if you're on Spotify, hit that 5-star. Forward it to a friend. All that good stuff. We'll be back here next week. Have a good one, y'all. Thanks for listening. Peace.
See you, everyone.